Edutainment Learning is powered by Academica Virtual Education and Collegia TV. For more information, visit www.edutainmentlearning.com.
My name is Manny Diaz Jr., and I am the Commissioner of Education in Florida, which is the equivalent of Secretary of Education in a lot of the countries where the students who are joining us today are. So I am the top education official in the state of Florida, state of 23 million people now, with about 3 million public school students. And my job every day is to go ahead and oversee our public school system, which includes all of our choice programs. And I started as a teacher in the classroom, teaching high school social studies, worked my way through school and became a school administrator, where I was an administrator in the public school district for a long time before I left. And what started me down that winding road, it was just was not happy with a lot of the things that I was seeing within the public school system. And so my first entry into politics is I actually ran for a school board seat, which is the school board controls local schools here in Florida. We're divided into 67 counties. We have 67 school districts, and I actually lost that race. But about a year and a half later, I was inspired to run for the Florida House of Representatives, which is the state legislature. And I was elected in 2012. And the time that I was in the House, I was the chair of several education committees, including becoming the chair of the Education Appropriations Committee, where all of the funding for schools comes through in the legislature. And then in 2018, I was elected to the Florida Senate, where I became the chair of the Education Committee. And throughout that time, I worked on a lot of pieces of legislation concentrating on education, both improving our public schools, expanding choices like charters and scholarships for students to be able to attend private schools if they wanted to. And then in 2022, I was fortunate enough that Governor DeSantis tapped me to become the Commissioner of Education. And I've been in this post since June 1st of 2022, and continuing to enjoy overseeing the schools and all the programs we have in Florida, and continuing to push policy to improve our schools.
Well, we can't thank Governor DeSantis enough. I think that was an awesome decision on his part. To give the kids kind of an idea of how big that school district was when you ran, it's the fourth largest in the nation, is it?
Yeah, the Miami-Dade County Public Schools is now the third largest in the United States. At the time, it was the fourth largest, and now only New York and Los Angeles are actually, I think New York and Los Angeles are larger. And it was a district seat. It's divided. There's nine school board members in Miami-Dade. I ran for one of the seats, which encompassed the area where I lived in Miami-Dade, Northwest Dade. That board, just to give you an idea, that board's budget is about $6 billion a year now. So it is a very large school district that serves about 330,000 students.
Wow. So that seat must've been like the size of a congressional district. So
that seat was a little smaller than a congressional district, but it was a pretty big seat. When I ran for the Senate, that seat is actually larger. The Senate seat's actually more like a congressional seat. As a senator, I represented 589,000 people in my district, and there's 40 senators in the Florida State Senate. So I was one of 40 in that body. And I chaired the Education Committee and was the vice chair of the Education Appropriations Committee in that body.
That must have been a fascinating perspective running for that office. That's incredible. Do you mind if we jump right into some student questions?
No, let's go ahead.
All right, very good. So some of you guys sent me questions ahead of time. Thank you. I'll go ahead and read some of them. One of our kids from Ecuador want to know what initiatives are being implemented to support mental health and well-being among students and educators in Florida?
Well, here in Florida, we actually have a specific mental health allocation that the state provides to school districts, a per student allocation that is about $180 million. We actually increased it $20 million this past year. And that goes to provide mental health initiatives at the school district. In other words, the district uses a combination of hiring folks to come inside with mental health backgrounds and provide those services. And they also can contract services with local agencies so that they have them available to be able to provide those services to students and on a myriad of things that students could be facing. We also have an initiative started by First Lady DeSantis here in the state of Florida. It's called Resiliency Florida, which is really putting together a set of standards, first of all, and then a program where we have parents and grandparents and others that we've created a training for to be able to have them receive this training and come into schools to provide additional support. Things that are everyday obstacles that students run into in their daily lives that they can use an adult that is trained to help them go through that, whether they're dealing something with their family or just something in school, their grades aren't going right, they lost a friend, whatever it could be, those kind of things that could be everyday obstacles for students. And that bolsters, in addition to the professionals, the mental health professionals, but really that resiliency initiative is really geared towards getting students in the mindset that they can, and that just because one thing went wrong, that you don't quit, you have to persevere and you have to continue to pursue and grind through these things because that's the way life is. And so we're very proud of that initiative. And like I said, it's just part of the toolbox that we have to provide mental health to our students.
Now, we have a thank you for that answer. And thank you for supplying all those resources. It sounds like a lot of the students and staffs in Florida are very safe when it comes to that. So we have Hideko in Peru. She can unmute to ask. She had sent in her question earlier. Go ahead, Hideko.
Hello, I am Hideko and I'm from Peru. Hello. I have one question. What strategies do you believe are most effective in addressing the achievement gap among students from different socioeconomic backgrounds?
So that's a great question. And here in Florida, we've taken a couple of initiatives. Number one, we switched over our testing to a progress monitoring system. And what that does is three times throughout the year, we test our students to see where their deficiencies are. And our teachers and parents get that data immediately so that they can provide instruction, additional help to try to get students where they need to be, right? Whether reading level or math. The other thing we've done is we've passed universal choice in our state. And what that does is it allows parents to make a decision on which setting best fits their student individually, regardless of whether it's a public school, a charter school, or a private school. And doesn't matter what your zip code is, doesn't matter what your socioeconomic status is, parents have the ability to make that decision. A lot of times we have students that could be at a great school that's performing very well, but individual students are having issues. And in order to get at that individual student, you have to provide a different setting. And so this gives parents the opportunity to really make a decision that is best for their child. They know them best. We believe the parents make the best decisions for their students here in Florida. And so we provide that along with all the additional help that we provide within the public school system.
Great, great, great stuff. Thank you so much. We'll go with a few more student questions and we'll let you go. But this student had emailed in, and this is from Argentina, and they wanted to know, what are your thoughts on the role of technology in education and how do you envision integration in the future?
Well, first of all, there's already a lot of technology that's integrated in education, but I think we also have to be very careful. So I think that we have to leverage technology wherever we can to improve our students' educational opportunities. And we do that with one example is this progress monitoring test that we do. This test is done on a computer so we can get the results back quickly. And teachers can make arrangements to provide interventions or accelerate students depending on their performance. And so we don't have to wait to send this test off and have it come back and wait for the results. It happens instantaneously. But, you also have the ability to communicate with students when they may be out sick. If they have an injury or if they have some kind of sickness and they have to stay home for a long period of time, they have the ability to communicate with those students at home and actually bring them into the classroom so they're not missing the lessons that are going on and the activities that are going on in the classroom. But you also have to be very careful with things like ChatGPT, where students can use a platform like that to write their essays or to provide their answers. And that's not really improving the education of that student. So I think there's a fine line, but we do have to leverage the technology that's available to provide further opportunities and really multiply the abilities of one teacher in a classroom to reach more students than they would if we didn't have the technology. So I think we have to be very careful with it, but we have to maximize the technology that does work and is available.
That's a phenomenal answer. And that's truly an answer from a former educator, where you say to just not just say no, but also to use it just responsibly to a certain level, not overuse it. So we have a question. Another kid from Peru had asked, how does the state of Florida support teachers in their professional development and ensure that they have the resources they need to succeed in their profession?
Well, starting off, we've invested, since Governor DeSantis has been in office as governor, we've invested $4.6 billion in teacher salaries and increasing the pay for our teachers. And that's just one point. The other point is you have to provide productive, effective professional development. And so at the state of Florida as a whole, we are constantly evolving and trying to improve our professional development. Right now, as we speak, I'm sitting here in Orlando, Florida, we have a week-long Teacher of the Year celebration. But during that celebration, we bring teachers from all over the state to join us here and provide extensive professional development where we can have sharing of best practices. We can have new techniques that have been tested and tried not only across the state, but across the country, and continuing to provide opportunities for teachers to grow. This is a craft. And, you know, when a teacher starts off year by year, they're going to continue to improve. But in order to do that, you have to provide the proper professional development for them to be able to try new things and to implement things and to be able to sit and look back at what they did the year before, what worked, what didn't work, and how do you improve that going forward. I think the best thing that we can do for teachers is provide them the time with other professionals to be able to hone their craft and improve their teaching, because as we know, a teacher's job day in, day out is to be in that classroom teaching students. And when you're in that, it becomes kind of lonely. It's important to provide them opportunities to share with other teachers and other professionals and academics who are working on these initiatives and these strategic tactics to improve education. So I think number one thing is we have to really give them the time and step aside and stop for a minute and give them an opportunity to grow.
That's wonderful. So you're describing a best practices kind of model, right?
Best practices, absolutely.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that's so special about having you at that leadership role is, you know, in other states they have people who've never came from the classroom who are state superintendents or commissioners of education. It's just an absolutely wonderful thing. I know you touched quite a bit about the involvement with students and parents and educators in the decision-making process, but can you elaborate a little bit about how that's taken a role in the state of Florida when it's come to educational policies?
Yeah, absolutely. And here in Florida, we passed a law that protects parents' rights. And I think for a long time in education, one of the things that I was always kind of beating the drum on when I was in the legislature early on is we need to get more parent involvement and engagement in our schools. Education only works, you know, you can't have a student sit in a classroom for 6 or 7 hours during the day and then go home and nobody knows what's going on to reinforce it. You also have other aspects of the school day and other things. Schools are part of a community. And in order to have a productive educational structure, you need to have members of the community and you certainly need to have parents involved in what's going on. Not only knowing what the curriculum is, what the things that students are learning, but where are the deficiencies and where what role a parent can take in stepping in and helping a student, whether it's math or making sure that students are reading their books for their English and literature class, when they go home. It really is incumbent when you have the cooperation of the parent, that student is getting it from the teacher, and then it's being backed up by the parent. And so we're very happy to see that. And we do have a law protecting parents' rights, students, any services to students, any changes in services, anything at all that's done with a student in the state of Florida in a school has to include the parent in that process. And that's how that's how you become effective at really education and the development of that student, right? Because there's things beyond education as a student develops in life and starts to become an adult and gets ready for a career. And having that parent involved is key to that.
Amazing, amazing stuff. And guys, those of you who aren't from the United States, that's not always common practice in some of our states in our country. So that's what makes what Florida is doing so special, especially as a parent and a fellow educator. It's really refreshing to hear that. So thank you for your work with that. We'll go with two more student questions. Is that all right?
Yep, absolutely.
All right. I know a lot of students on here are interested in becoming teachers, and it's a great profession. I'm a fourth generation teacher. I hope my son follows in that footpath there. So I highly, highly recommend, no matter what you want to do in life, I highly recommend to start out as a teacher and then kind of pivot from there. But what steps are being addressed in the state of Florida to address any teacher shortages and attract more individuals to the teaching profession? What kind of actions are you guys taking at the state level?
Well, we're taking a multi-pronged approach here in Florida. And thanks to the leadership of our governor, like I mentioned before, the investment of $4.6 billion over the last 5 years in directly to teacher salaries, because salaries are an important part. And if you're going to attract individuals into teaching and keep them, they have to know that they can make a living where they can have a life and a family. But that's not the only thing. And what we've done here in Florida is we've actually created multiple pathways to attract people from other walks of life that didn't start off their career or their schooling into being a teacher. We have a military pathway that attracts our military veterans and first responders into the teaching field because they have a lot of valuable skills that they can use in the classroom to not be only teach our students, but become mentors to our students. We've also just created a teacher apprenticeship program in which the traditional model, you go to school, you finish school, and then you go into a classroom. Well, this program is looking at individuals that may be at a school, maybe don't have their degree yet, and are interested in the field of education. And it not only allows them to finish school, but what we do is we put them in the classroom with a mentor teacher, and they teach side by side with that teacher, and they learn the skills that it takes to be an effective teacher in the classroom. And you know, what better way to learn how to do something than by doing it, and having a mentor teacher there to provide guidance, to provide instruction. And so when these folks finish this program, they don't only have the theory and the background that you get in school, but they've actually been sitting in a classroom and working with students and are watching and partaking in these lessons. And that makes for a much more effective teacher. And so we've also extended our temporary certificates to allow some of the individuals who are career changers to meet some of the requirements. But sometimes, you know, you get, you know, I always give the example of you have someone working at NASA and they're an engineer and they just decide that they want to make a change in their career and they want to give back and get in the classroom. We have made it easier for that person who has the content knowledge to come into a high school and teach a science course without having them have to necessarily go back to school. And we can provide professional development in improving the actual delivery and teaching skills, but they're already an expert in the content. And this is something that you'll see across colleges and universities where most of the professors are really have degrees and backgrounds in content. And then they kind of develop their skills and their style of teaching. But there's nothing better, especially in the math and sciences, than to have a content expert in front of that classroom. So we have taken a multi-pronged approach. Not only increasing salaries, increasing professional development, but also creating these pathways to attract others that wouldn't be the typical person that would be coming into education or didn't start off as a person that was going to go into education, and attracting them into the field.
That's alternate route to licensure kind of deal.
Exactly.
I myself is one of those. I came from broadcasting and went into teaching. So I love
There you
it.
go.
So can you share some success stories? This comes from Mexico, some success stories or examples of schools or programs that have made a significant positive impact on students' lives in Florida.
Well, look, one thing comes to mind when we talk about that. We have a lot of programs in the state of Florida, and a lot of initiatives when it comes to science and STEM and all those things. But the Universal Choice Program that was passed 2 years ago here in the state of Florida is changing students' lives because, like I said before, this allows a parent, regardless of what their income is, to make a decision to put the student at the best setting possible. And if it means that that setting is a small private school, they now have the ability to use their state dollars to take that money and provide to pay for tuition for students to attend that school. It also is an educational savings account. So there are parents here in the state of Florida. We're actually the last count going into next year is we're almost at 60,000. They have decided to take this account and actually do an a la carte individual homeschooling program where the parent is doing the homeschooling, but they're able to use those funds to hire teachers and tutors in subject areas they may not be familiar with or who are experts, bring in art teachers, bring in equipment that would allow them to expand their educational opportunities. So really, a parent and a student can design their educational experience while being at home. Or some of these students that participate this aren't traveling. You know, if you have individual sport athletes, for example, if you have a golfer, if you have a swimmer, if you have a gymnast, a lot of those individuals are traveling a lot, and they're involved heavily in athletic competition. Well, this allows them to cater an educational program that fits their schedule and allows them to continue to succeed academically while they're pursuing this athletic. And it also goes the same thing for musicians and those that are involved in all types of arts because they have that same kind of schedule. And this again allows them to still partake in school, still have their education formed while they're participating or they're pursuing their art. A lot of these individuals are very motivated and high performing in their field, but you can't have someone go through those years and not have their education. And so this gives parents the opportunity to do that, as well as those that are just deciding that they're going to teach their students at home and they want to give them a particular type of education using the resources that normally would go to a school, allowing the parent to pick and choose the programming to make sure that that student is well-rounded and they receive an education that's going to allow them to succeed in their life after they're done. So that has been very effective. It's been especially effective with students in low-income areas where sometimes there have been schools that have not been performing well. And the old way of doing it was, you know, you went to the school in the neighborhood you lived. And if that school wasn't performing, well, that's just where you went. Well, we've shattered that here. Our charter schools have flourished, and we have over 700 charter schools in the state of Florida, and almost 400,000 students attending charter schools in the state of Florida, which is huge. But in addition to that, we now have up to 468,000 of our students participating in the scholarship program. So you're talking about almost a million students that are participating in a program other than their neighborhood school. In addition to that, school districts have understood that this is a competitive market, and now they've created special programming. So now you have schools that specialize in aeronautics. You have schools that specialize in cybersecurity. You have schools that specialize in aviation. All of this has to do with the fact that they need to create programming that is attractive to students. And a lot of these schools have been successful in not only keeping their students, but these programs have flourished. And now they're producing students that are going out into the workforce with technical school skills or going into careers where they're going to advance their education at the university level and getting a degree in aeronautical engineering, or they're going into the field of cybersecurity. These things all occur because of the competition. Another one that's become big now in Florida is we invested heavily in the semiconductor industry in creating a workforce. And so a lot of these companies want to come to Florida, but the main problem that they have is they need to have a workforce, right? And it's a very specific workforce when you're dealing with semiconductors and very specific conditions. And we know that that's a big issue because during the pandemic, we saw that there was a shortage of these semiconductors because they were all made outside of the country. And so building up that infrastructure and providing those opportunities, and let's face it, it's a very lucrative career that someone can spend the rest of their life in and advance themselves and make a good living, build a family, and be a productive citizen.
That is brilliant stuff. And the vocational stuff that you guys are doing in Florida is just, it's unheard of. I'm out here on the West Coast. It's something that we only hear of, which is very fascinating. So Commissioner Diaz, before we let you go, this is a question that I personally ask all of our guests. Is there any advice that you could give to these kids as they go off and blaze their own trail in the world?
Well, you know, number one, you need to set goals and you need to figure out what it is that you want to do with yourself and with your life. And by setting those goals, then everything else opens up. And regardless of the obstacles that come in your path, you have to continue to plow forward and don't let those obstacles get in your way. That's why it's so important to set goals, because when you have the goal at the end, you know what it is you're fighting for, what you're fighting through. And so I would, my advice is to set that goal and stick with it and persevere regardless of what obstacles or who tells you that you can't do something. Anything is possible as long as you believe that it's possible and you are willing to put in the hard work and have the perseverance to continue to pursue it. So don't give up. But again, you got to set that goal first to know where you're going.
Thank you so much, Commissioner Manny Diaz, and we can't wait to follow your career even further. We know that there's so much more that we're going to hear from you, and it's just wonderful. From one fellow teacher to another, thank you for all your work. Before I end the meeting for all, thank you all for attending. I'm going to allow you guys to unmute to thank Commissioner Manny Diaz for taking time out of his valuable day to come talk to you guys. So can we say thank you, Commissioner Manny Diaz?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.